Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
We'd like to welcome you into Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this morning, the ninth week of the Tyranny Response Network. So glad you've joined us this morning, and we're looking forward to another great week of exposing tyranny for what it is and promoting liberty here in this great nation of the United States of America. We have a number of things we want to bring to your attention. First of all is the phone number for the station. You can reach us here at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. And questions and comments may be sent 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Policyofliberty.net has a lot to offer. Please go to the homepage, read through what's on the front page about the radio broadcast, as well as read through the different links, Quotations for Liberty, Famous Economist, books and papers that I've written, my current column for the Times Examiner, things like that are all available at policyofliberty.net. Just a reminder, if you're listening to this show anytime besides 7:30 to 9 o'clock in the morning, Eastern Time, Monday through Friday, you're listening to a recorded broadcast. Appreciate the fact that you're doing that, but obviously you won't be able to call in live during any other time between 7:30 and 9 a.m. Eastern Time. So again, thanks for listening. Tell people about our webcast, too. We want to tell people that we can be heard by going to the policyofliberty.net homepage and clicking on the link that says Listen Live. There's a live link that's underlined there. If you click that, it'll open up your media player or whatever you use to listen to sound files, and your friends or family or whoever it is can listen anywhere in the world, certainly anywhere in America, between 7:39 Eastern Time, live to this show. And they can also listen to the other recorded broadcasts of the Tyranny Response Network 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So good news for the webcast. We're going to have some more technology upgrades this week, folks. I know some people are getting tired of all our technology upgrades since they seem to give us some service outages here and there. But it is for the betterment of the whole. Every step we do take and actually improve and sophisticate is a step better that the Tyranny Response Network is. So stay tuned for better reception, hopefully this week or perhaps next week. Or the week after, depending on how slow things or quickly things get done, here on the Tyranny Response Network. We have a couple of things that came in over the weekend. Specifically, we have an email this morning from Nelson, and he says, "Good morning, Professor. I was just reading a marvelous old Dover reprint called Beethoven the Man, the Artist as Revealed in His Own Words. As you may know, he was unclassifiable philosophically, somewhat torn between the humanism of his day and the faith he inwardly knew to be true, but he was highly moralistic and populistic, and what do you think my eyes should fall on in the middle of it all? The quotes below are on your main subject." And this is what he's talking about, his the tragedy that was about to befall his nephew. When his brother died, he had to take over the upbringing of his nephew. Thus, the anguish and frustration he expresses, which sounds startlingly real and familiar today, I don't know exactly what kind of school he's talking about, but it probably makes no difference. It's very true that a drop will hollow a stone. 1,000 lovely impressions are obliterated when children are placed in wooden institutions, while they might receive from their parents the most soulful impressions, which would continue to exert their influence till the latest age. That's from his diary in the spring of 1817. Beethoven, of course, was dissatisfied with Giannatasio's school, in which he had placed his nephew. Carl is a different child, said Beethoven, after he's been with me a few hours. In 1896, after an attempted suicide, his nephew attempted suicide, Beethoven said to Breuning, "My Carl was an institute. Educational institutions furnished forth only hothouse plants." interesting, his criticism of the institutional school. Now, there was no public school as we have it today, at any rate, back at that time. There was sort of a public school movement in Prussia, certainly, and that's where we got our roots here in the American public school system to a large degree. But it was nothing like the system we have today. And yet, even then, there were criticisms from great minds, from great performers like Beethoven, of the institutionalization of schooling and education, which caused a lot of grief. Funny that we should be talking about that today, because we are going to emphasize a little bit the public school today, simply because coming up at 10 o'clock this morning, there will be a debate between conservatives and libertarians. Yes, the hard right is splitting away from the more neoconservative or moderates on the right, and even some others, who over the Put Parents in Charge bill. And the Tyranny Response Unit will be there, along with a couple others, stating their opposition to the bill. And so if you'd like to, if you happen to be in Greenville, South Carolina, and would like to join in on this debate, you're welcome to do so by attending the Sims Library at 10 o'clock. It's the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting. Sims Library is located on Pelham Road, just somewhere between Hudson and Boiling Springs, if that gives you any indication where. If you haven't been to Sims Library, starts at 10 o'clock. Get there early because there may not be enough seats there. Get there if you can, get away from work or get over just for a little while. Don't be afraid to pop in even in the middle of things for a little while. It goes till noon, 10 o'clock till noon, at the Sims Library today. Debate over the Put Parents in Charge Act. I'm opposed to the Put Parents in Charge Act because philosophically, the act promotes socialism. The act does not do anything to foster parental control. The act proposes or purports to want to actually improve the public school, which is one of our, if not the greatest enemy we have on the right. And therefore, for all of those reasons and all of its stated objectives, I am opposed to it. I'm opposed to socialism. I'm opposed to public schooling. And I do not want government to get a foothold into regulating parents. This is the real problem with Put Parents in Charge. On its face, so difficult or trying for those who homeschool or have their kids in Christian schools or private schools, but because it opens the door for government to regulate us more, and that's one thing we do not want. We don't. It's not worth the money, folks, to let government regulate us even more. So there's my argument in a nutshell. We'll be talking and debating about other things today. As far as I know, the proponents of PPIC, who are conservatives, not liberals, are all, of course, opposed as well as I am to the act for different reasons, of course. They're actually scared that their idol, the public school, might be torn down. But conservatives who like the PPIC or libertarians who like the PPIC look at it from a pragmatic point of view. Well, this is gradualism. We might actually be able to get a little bit better off in society by going this way, and gradualism is a good thing. Or it's just pragmatic, and people saying, well, look, I just want the money. I don't really care about the other things so much because, you know, government's going to do bad things anyway. At least I'll get something out of this bill. And they're not looking, in my opinion, at the wider implications, the long-run implications of having such an act in place. But, again, if you may disagree with that, feel free to give a call here to the show, and we'll discuss it this morning. We've got some other stuff coming up on the public school, people who've written in or sent articles, and we'll be discussing that in this very hour since it is an important topic of the day. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview. You know, before I forget, I just wanted to make one small note of a very important event that occurred here on Sunday. That is, our producer Daniel had his 14th birthday. So instead of being produced by a 13-year-old, which is to his credit, because he's such a great job, Daniel is now 14 years old, still working in his homeschool projects and doing quite well, enjoying being the producer at the of the Christian Worldview show on the Tyranny Response Network. So if you get a chance today, send to questions@policyofliberty.net just a happy birthday note to Daniel, who's doing such a great job and now is the ripe old age of 14. I wanted to bring up, before we continue, because it relates to the public school issue or the government school issue, another article from the Freeman this week, January-February 2005 edition. It should go to the website for Freeman, by the way, which is the Foundation of Economic Education website, fee.org. Sign up to get this great magazine sent to you. It's chock full of wonderful information, short articles that are very readable by most people and can help you think much better. FEE.org, if you're a student, it's $10. I believe they try to get $39 for parents or others who are not students to get the magazine per year. Anyway, there's an article on page 18 in this edition called A Consensus Society by Russell Madden. And he's decrying in here the idea of the bringing people to consensus, and somehow consensus makes things better. But consensus really is not what we want, because in a consensus society, the will of the people could be wrong. The idea that a democracy somehow purifies whatever is being put down the pike for public policy is simply not correct. You cannot have a purely consensus society and still have liberty fomented. You're going to have people being deprived of rights as soon as you go and try to move people, so-called, to the census. He says, my wife and I last year completed a 5,000-mile road trip to Washington and back. A friend we visit in Seattle is a librarian in that city system. While we were there, she alerted us to the upcoming grand opening of the brand new $165 million Seattle Central Library, along with a few thousand Seattle residents. We lined up outside to inspect this new construction. With a relatively rare blue sky and temperatures warming to the 70s, we waited for the opening ceremonies and our chance to join the throngs in exploring the library. A festive atmosphere suffused the crowd. The concentration of people also brought out local political activists with a variety of petitions for signing. Seattle is known for its liberal bent, just no doubt about that. But I was surprised at the subject of the petition. A middle-aged gentleman asked me to sign. He and his co-workers wanted to halt a proposal to finance charter schools with tax dollars. Person after person signed the petition, nodding to his assurances that allowing this change would occur would destroy our public school system. Sounds familiar, like people worried about the public school system here in Greenville on the Put Parents in Charge Act, I might interject. When he looked at me, I told him I was a visitor, but I added that I would not have signed the petition anyway. Of course, no taxes should be used for any kind of school. I was prepared to leave the situation at that. But the fellow pursued the subject and questioned my answer. But charter schools would hurt public education. I looked at him and said, I think all schools should be private. I don't think government has any business regulating ideas. Wow, big statement. The astonished expression on his face quickly hardened into annoyance. But we live in a consensus society, he said, evidently astounded at my abysmal ignorance. We voted to support public education. There are some things that we are not supposed to vote on, I said, growing equally irked. That's what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are all about. He waved towards a looming glass of wall in the new library. "Then you must think that libraries should be private, too," he said hotly. "That people should have to pay to use them." I nodded. "Yes, all libraries should be private, too." He leaned closer and sneered, clearly unable to comprehend my alien mindset. "Well, welcome to my library. Enjoy." With that, he moved along to friendlier, more receptive environs. While we ended up not visiting the library until a day or two later, a separate story, this random encounter encapsulated one of the biggest problems undermining the integrity of our society. This gentleman's invocation of the phrase consensus society was clearly designed to crush any objections I had to his plans. For him, as long as I reach a consensus, no one else has a legitimate right to complain. Dissenters simply had to accept what a majority of their fellow citizens desire and have voted to support. So I'll stop the reading of that article there. It's a good article, and it points us to an important reminder that indeed we cannot be, as Christians, supporters blindly of any kind of consensus decision simply because the world is not run by perfect men or angels or those who are always looking out for the interests of everyone else. And therefore, on that basis alone, consensus becomes very dangerous, because if the consensus is all of a sudden that we can abort every child that we want to, or we can kill everyone who is a certain ethnic race, whether it be Kulaks or Jews or anyone else, or that some other abominable or immoral practice is good, then that becomes the law of the land, and everybody who violates it becomes evil. And there, if you hold a conviction against what they stand for by consensus, you become an outsider, a traitor, a pariah, something like that that needs to be despised and moved along. Well, this is of great concern. We must not go along with this idea of the consensus society, certainly. I want to give a quick plug, too, for the Times Examiner magazine this morning, or newspaper this morning. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. That's 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville, South Carolina, 29609. You can call 864-268-0576, 864-268-0576. The Times Examiner can be acquired for a mere $20 per year in-state, $22 a year out-of-state, and it's chock-full of great articles by Walter Williams, Thomas Sowell, Ben Graydon, Joe Sobran, Charlie Reese, Phyllis Schlafly, and yours truly, the Tyranny Response Unit, on a weekly basis. They'll help you think much better and really brighten your week. If you're tired of reading liberal columns, give Bob or Laverl a call there at 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. 0576 for the Times Examiner. And I bring that up because in this week's in upcoming Times Examiners, you'll find articles by me, the Tyranny Response Unit, against the PPIC. The first week is a general critique of the objectives of PPIC and why true conservatives and libertarians should not be in favor of the PPIC. The second week, a second article, which will appear on the March 9th edition, is a positive alternative. What a real, true liberty alternative would be to PPIC if we're looking at public policy. Again, I'll be presenting those this morning at the Sims Library on Pelham Road in Greenville from 10 o'clock till 12 o'clock as part of the opposed to PPIC debate forum at the Americans for Constitutional Government. Well, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We've come up against a quick break again, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information
to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Welcome back to the show. You know, there is a real harsh truth about government schools that has been brought out by Bruce N. Short in his new book, The Harsh Truth About Public Schools, which I've been reading and which we've enjoyed immensely here on the show. Bruce Short is a professor, he's a lawyer, graduate of Harvard Law School, a PhD from Stanford University, was a Fulbright scholar, and is now heading up the Exodus Mandate. That's bringing very conservative Christians here to South Carolina in order to try to completely change the society, at least in South Carolina, as if it's not already conservative enough for many people, I suppose. It's going to even become more so as more folks move in here. And we welcome them coming here, by the way. It's a great idea to push out in any way with anybody the hardcore liberals that we find here in this state and especially around other places in America. Well, Bruce Short has done just an exceptional job explaining what indeed is the public school is all about. And one of my favorite quotes, I read the other day on the other show, I'll read again, is from this fellow Charles Potter in 1930. He was a signer of the first Humanist Manifesto, and he wrote that education is thus a most powerful ally of humanism, and every public school is a school of humanism. What can the theistic Sunday school, meeting for 1 hour or an hour once a week and teaching only a fraction of the children, do to stem the tide of a 5-day program of humanistic teachings? It's so well put. I mean, they're so clear what the founders and the progenitors and those who want to carry on the torch of the public school were up to. There's no question about their purposes, their desires, and their goals for public education, for the so-called public school or the government school. The harsh truth about a government school is that it is a pagan seminary. It is something that's antithetical to the Christian faith, antithetical to the principles of the founders and liberty, and is there as in a subversive manner, propped up by the left, to challenge and take away those things which we hold dear, to conform and mold the minds of children so that generation after generation we gradually move away from what God has ordained as right to what Satan and the world and those are the forces of anti-liberty enjoy the most. And this book has been a very good book for me to read. I always enjoy reading things that criticize the public school. Of course, I've written on it myself. It's Chapter 6 of Bible and Government Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, which is available on the website, policyofliberty.net. I have a very scathing critique, in terms of, in 2003 at any rate, of the government school as well. Well, I noticed that Dr. Stephen Yates, who's a professor at University of South Carolina, Upstate, he's in the philosophy department. He's a libertarian Christian, a very solid advocate of freedom and, of course, of the Christian worldview. He has written a short book review on the short book, Bruce Short's book, The Harsh Truth About Government Schools. It's a little bit long to read the whole thing on the air, but I thought I might just read a few paragraphs for you in light of the fact, again, that we're doing the PPIC this morning at 10 o'clock. He says, Bruce Short has written what may be this decade's definitive critique of the government-sponsored school system in this country. Short is a member of the South Carolina-based Exodus Mandate Network. Along with the T.C. Pinky, who penned the foreword, he was one of the co-sponsors of a recent resolution put before the Southern Baptist Convention to remove Christian children from government schools. The resolution was not adopted, but drew nationwide attention to the issue of our rapidly deteriorating government schools. Short's book is aimed primarily at Christian parents, but can be read and appreciated by non-Christians. Short draws on hundreds of sources, ranging from newspaper reports to scientific studies. His topics include 1, the anti-Christian bias in government schools; 2, the mainstreaming of homosexuality in them; 3, the long-standing dumbing down of government schools, including manipulated test scores and statistics, as well as a long-term growth of an anti-academic mindset; 4, the breaking down of discipline and the rise of violence, as well as the underreporting of violent crime in government schools; 5, the war against boys, a chief component of radical feminist incursions. 6, the use of legal mind-altering drugs such as Ritalin and Prozac. 7, many others. Short has a look of has a look at a number of school reform efforts, argues that they are delusions, and concludes by contending that time has come to speak out against government schools with our feet. He has ready responses for Christian parents who would claim, for example, that they did not have time or the resources for homeschool their children, and for Christian teachers who would maintain that they have obligation to remain in government schools to ensure a Christian presence in them. The history of how we got to this mess has been told many times before, so I will be as brief as possible. State-sponsored schools were not part of the original makeup of this country. None of the founders, all of whom were educated at home or privately, saw providing compulsory state-sponsored education as a proper function of the central government, which is why education is not mentioned in the U.S. Constitution, or in state constitutions, I might add, because, of course, education has always been a statewide thing, not just a federal thing. In the public sense, there were no government schools, Yates continues, in any modern sense of that term until the 1840s, when Horace Mann's Unitarians started them up in Massachusetts. For those of you who don't know what a Unitarian is, it's one who denies the Trinity, one who believes there is one God but denies the personage of Jesus Christ as a member of the Godhead as well as the Holy Spirit. The Unitarians started them up in Massachusetts as what were then known as common schools. Mann had been to Prussia, where he learned of a far different view of the relationship between central government and citizens than our own tradition, which sees the individual as a special being, both morally and economically. Prussian schools considered children property of the state and educated them accordingly. They were raised to be obedient to the state, their purpose being to advance the interests of the state. Short also cites Robert Owen, one of the Anglo-American world's first influential socialists who developed a similar philosophy of education. Owen believed that children should be separated from their parents as early as possible and raised by the state. He believed that people were exclusively the products of their social environments and that if nurtured properly by the state, it could be molded into whatever was desired. A key to the thinking that went into forming the official ideology of state-sponsored education was that human beings are innately good, not sinful, and that human nature could be perfected by the right kind of educational system. The ideology that eventually developed would hold that children could be molded into willing consumers of the products of big business and obedient servants of government. In short, the aims of state-sponsored schools were to transform thinking, highly individualistic and very literate citizens into unthinking, collectivized mass. The slow but steady decline of literacy in all kinds was a byproduct. Why did 19th century Christians go along with this scheme? One of the central reasons was that there were more Protestants who hoped that common schools would stop the spread of Catholicism in the New World. What mattered most about Horace Mann was that he wasn't sympathetic to Catholicism. It mattered less that he and his Unitarian colleagues were preaching that a man could perfect himself through his own efforts, and that compulsory education was a means to this end. So Protestant Christians, including any clergy, supported government schools, thinking they could control them. Very slowly, Pandora's box opened. A creeping secularization began. A few theologians, R.L. Dabney as an example, warned of the emerging dangers of the state-sponsored education. Dabney, who was no friend of Catholics, was surprisingly prescient. He warned that the danger was not Catholicism, but secularism, and that the common school movement continued unchecked. If it did, government schools would end up entirely secular institutions. Christianity, in whatever form, would eventually be driven from them. At the heart of the danger was a transference of responsibility for education from the home to the government, an inherently secular institution. I'm going to stop the reading there for right now before we go to a break. When we come back, I'll just finish up and read a couple of his concluding remarks in this article, which I think is very eye-opening and just an excellent piece summarizing Short's philosophy, or thesis, I should say, in his book, The Harsh Schools About Harsh Truth About Public Schools. You're listening to Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview. This is the Tyranny Response Network, and we'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but he has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as he did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we'd like to welcome you back into Christian Worldview this morning. So glad that you've joined us here, and we hope that you'll participate in the show either by sending us your questions and comments by email or certainly by giving a call to the show here, 864-201-6955, talking about a hot topic, at least here in South Carolina, and one that will no doubt expand to other states if it hasn't already, the Put Parents in Charge bill, which will be debated today at the Sims Library in Greenville, and I will be one of those who are opposed to the act because I think it is just another movement towards socialism, towards trying to bolster and prop up our enemy, the public school, and its objective is also debatable, mute or moot, because it says that it gives parents more control or restores parental control in education, which we already have. We don't need the government to fix something if it ain't broke, and that's precisely the method they're going to use to get the camel's nose in the tent of regulation so that they'll be able to regulate us, the camel being the regulation, the whole state idea of how to run things. At any rate, I'm criticizing here on Christian Worldview pretty sharply the Put Parents in Charge Act. Lining myself up with the liberals who don't like it. Very rare that I'd line up with liberals, by the way, on things. But in this case, I am lining up with liberals for different reasons. They don't like the act because they're scared that it might take away some of their money and some of their the influence of their god, namely the public school, one of their many idols or icons in the modern world. And instead, I'm opposed to the PPIC Act because I look at it as a form of gradualism at best, something that we get a little carrot and a big stick with, a little bit of money for some people and a tax credit, which is a good thing, admittedly, but then opens Pandora's box for more government regulation. So if you're interested in hearing this debate, please come to the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting, 10 o'clock at Sims Library on Pelham Road in Greenville, and it goes through noon. Look forward to seeing you there, and make sure you say hello and that you heard about the meeting on the Tyranny Response Network on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this morning. Be happy to greet you afterwards. We've been reading a little bit of an article or a book review done by Stephen Yates on the harsh truth about public schools, written by Bruce Short. Dr. Stephen Yates, professor of philosophy at University of South Carolina at Upstate in Spartanburg, South Carolina, a great defender of liberty and of free markets and of the Christian worldview. Appreciate his efforts. Continuing in the conclusion of this article, he says, "The harsh truth about public schools is that they are an enemy of not just Christianity, but of academics, personal and intellectual independence, and even our children's safety. They cannot educate, which is unsurprising since over the past couple of decades their focus has been on inculcating political correctness and teaching job skills, outcome-based education, school to work, workforce investment, and finally no child left behind. Their aim has not been education, but the production of desirable forms of mass behavior. The government-sponsored educational system is thus the major contributor to the dumbing down of the country. Its guiding philosophies are materialistic humanism and moral subjectivism, with the full backing of the U.S. Supreme Court. Government schools have thus become not just anti-Christian, but anti-academic, anti-male, anti-collectivist, and violent. The best thing to do, of course, would be to abolish the entire government school system. Hooray! Lock, stock, and barrel," says Stephen Yates. "Given that this is not a live option at present, Christian parents in particular should remove their children from government schools and either homeschool them or place them in a private Christian school. These same arguments apply to non-Christians who are equally capable of surveying the facts and recognizing that their children might be victims of violence or put on potentially damaging but entirely legal mind-altering drugs such as Ritalin, especially if they're boys. They are equally in danger, moreover, of having their children simply taken away from them by the state or on trumped-up charges of neglect or child abuse if they refuse to allow such treatment. Homeschooling is now the fastest-growing educational movement in the country. Its documented results are sufficiently promising to hold out hope that if enough parents homeschool their children, in less than a generation, we could halt the dumbing down of the country, win the culture war, restore morality, and possibly even reverse the steady transformation of America into a socialist nation of poorly educated, chronic dependents, and mindless spendthrifts." That's a good... You must have thought about that last line a few minutes. Let me read that again. "Its document results are sufficiently promising to hold out hope that if enough parents homeschool their children in less than a generation, we could halt the dumbing down of the country, win the culture war, restore morality, and possibly even reverse the steady transformation of America into a socialist nation of poorly educated, chronic dependents, and mindless spendthrifts. If you are a parent, buy this book and read it, even if you are not a Christian. You owe it to your children." Appreciate that, Stephen Yates. Always insightful you are. Every time I read your columns or we meet up at a certain event and I have the opportunity and the privilege of listening to what you have to say, always learn something, and it always is insightful, informative, and right on the money. So we appreciate Stephen's critique this morning of the public school, brought on by his review of Bruce Short's great new book called The Harsh Truth About Public Schools. Well, we're going to be talking about the public school here at this debate this morning, the Put Parents in Charge Act. One of the stated objectives the second stated objective of the Put Parents in Charge Act is to improve the quality or output of the public school. Now, why in the world would we want to do this? I just got an email from a friend this morning who is a libertarian who's actually in support of improving the public school. And his rationale isn't 100% clear to me, but essentially he believes there's some public benefit by having or virtue by having the public school improved. This is a very interesting thesis, but I think it's quite moot, quite debatable. If the public school does any good at all, the public school would be teaching people how to do basic skills like reading, writing, and arithmetic. But given that its objectives are completely different than that, that it teaches those things still in order to produce a better statist or all the things that Stephen Yates just mentioned in his article, why in the world would we want to support an institution that has its goals and objectives leaning in that direction? It cannot produce in the long run good things for liberty. It cannot produce things as an institution in the long run that are good for morality. It can't even engender peace. It cannot even engender freer markets or capitalism. And it's in a very essence opposed to the things which we value the most highly and therefore must be opposed by us who love liberty and who want to embrace the vision of the founders and pass that on to the next generation and the great blessings of this country to those who would follow after us, our children and grandchildren. Well, we're going to be taking a quick break here on the Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a second.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Brain this morning, and we're hoping that all of you listening to Christian Worldview are being helped to think a little bit better and more deeply about some issues today. How many people who support Put Parents in Charge do you suppose actually read the bill? I mean, they probably just heard, well, other conservatives like it, or by default, liberals hate it, and therefore it must be a good thing. And so they're just rallying behind it without having actually read the bill. The bill's not that long, and all you need to do is read the objective section, which is very short, and explains what the purposes of this bill are, to know that what should give you some pause to begin with, but to know after some thinking that you really cannot support this in good conscience as far as its principles go. Now, you can be a pragmatist and say, well, look, I want to help some people get some tax credit money. If this passes, they're going to go for the carrot. Now, that's understandable, but I think, and I hope that I can convince people, at least today, that the carrot is not worth it. It's not worth the carrot to get the stick that'll come afterward and the greater amounts of regulation. By the way, it's about 38 degrees here in Greenville this morning. We're going to warm up only a few degrees to 41, and we're even looking somehow in the morning here to possibly have some snow. I don't know how that can be in the forecast, but it is. A little bit of snow this morning, a little bit of rain left over from this particular storm. In case you're wondering about the weather, wanting to keep you informed here on the Tyranny Response Network Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Well, moving on to another issue here, and obviously we'll come back to the public school or government school issue. If any of you would like to call in and discuss it, be happy to do so. Fox News reported, however, this morning that there is an embattled data collector in a big Homeland Security contractor by Kelly Vlaus from Fox News. She says, the nation's giant in personal information collection, which announced recently that it had unwittingly handed over at least 145,000 American Social Security numbers and other private records to a ring of crooks, is also a major government contractor providing the tools and sophisticated Homeland Security screening and law enforcement surveillance efforts. This has led experts who have been watching the ever-expanding ChoicePoint, incorporated in Atlanta-based commercial information service, to wonder how the massive theft would affect the integrity of such sweeping Homeland Security efforts as the screening of airline passengers and terrorist and criminal profiling. It also causes them to wonder how safe Americans' personal information is, even in the government's hands. Folks, let's stop for a moment here. We need to remind ourselves of what Albert J. Nock reminded us in his important book, Our Enemy, the State. Quoting someone who is not normally our favorite person, Sigmund Freud, and talking about what the state is actually like. Remember, in the article here from Fox News, it says, even in the government's hands, it also causes them to wonder how safe Americans' personal information is, even in the government's hands, as if we can normally trust the government to keep our information safe. Is this actually the case? Well, here's what Albert J. Knox says. So far from encouraging the wholesome development of social power, the state is invariably, as Madison said, turned every contingency into a resource for depleting social power and enhancing state power. As Dr. Sigmund Freud has observed, it cannot even be said that the state has ever shown any disposition to suppress crime, but only to safeguard its own monopoly of crime. In Russia and in Germany, for example, we have lately seen the state moving with great alacrity against the infringement of its private monopoly by private persons, while at the same time exercising that monopoly with unconscionable ruthlessness. Taking the state wherever found, striking into history at any point, one sees no way to differentiate the activities of its founders, administrators, and beneficiaries from those of a professional criminal class. And I think that he's, of course, he's writing back at the earlier part of the 20th century, in case some of you are scratching your head saying, why is he talking about Russia and Germany? He's talking about the professional criminal class that occurred at that time, and not that it's any different now, just has different things going on in its particular policies. Well, here we have a discussion about the Homeland Security and other administrations, other parts of the Bush administration. Folks, we need to wake up and realize that the greatest threat to liberty in the history of the world, the greatest threat to personal security, the greatest threat to life, the greatest threat to property has not been the mafia, although that has been a threat. It's not been the Roman Catholic Church, although that has, too, been a threat. It's not the Islamic movement, which is certainly a threat. These things are all threats, but the greatest threat by far, greater than all of those other threats and more mentioned combined, has been the state. The state has killed more people, has destroyed more property, has dilapidated the environment by far more than anything else in the history of the world. We have record after record, year after year, for thousands of years, of the state being the greatest progenitor of evil, the destruction of rights, destruction of property, and destruction of life that man has ever known. And so when we talk about, as Americans sort of glibly do, it causes them to also wonder how safe Americans' personal information is, even in the hands of the government. It shows just how indoctrinated people have become into trusting the American state, the American government. Why do we do that? The American state has not shown any reason for us to trust it. The American state has practiced all sorts of immorality, or at least promoted it through its various decrees, legislations, and so forth. Abortion is legal here. We move towards more towards homosexual rights in this country and alternative lifestyles all the time. We are not stemming the tide. We are not turning the clock back and going towards Leave It to Beaver. At the impulse of government protection and prodding, we are instead moving towards an anti-Christian, secular society, anti-liberty society, and that is indeed the heritage that government brings. So it's a great concern to me when I read these kinds of articles, when I see Americans assuming that even at the government's hands, the government somehow is a benign thing that is helpful, whereas other people, like criminal bands here that they handed data over to inadvertently, are going to harm us. Both of them can harm us. In fact, government can harm us more. It does harm us more. It's a regular extorter of money, a regular denier of rights, whereas these crime organizations, as bad as they may be, only hit now and then. Government hits you all the time. Anyway, he continues on here. The government becoming a big potential customer for companies like ChoicePoint, driving ChoicePoint to gather more and more information, and that puts data in a vulnerable position, says Jim Harper, director of information policy studies at the Cato Institute, and editor of Privacy ILLA.org. If a company is essential to the surveillance process, is this careless? I think we should definitely step back and wonder about data mining, he added. And we will, too. There will be inevitable privacy problems. There are concerns that we have here at the Tyranny Response Network that this ChoicePoint thing is going to be used by the state to gather information and harm people's rights, even as they've already done and made their own mistakes. Why couldn't someone simply offer them more money for the data they have and buy them off or pay for something in order to collect data on others? Well, there's no reason to believe that such corruption could not occur, and it's always dangerous when you have centralized information so that government or crime organizations, other crime organizations, can use their particular activities and force against honest people. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're trying to do that here today on the Tyranny Response Network, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Someone from the research staff, we have a very wise and thorough research staff here at the Tyranny Response Network, especially for Christian Worldview, sent me an article from newswithviews.com by a fellow named Devi Kidd. This is actually from a while back, and it's interesting to note what it has to say about President Bush, the IRS. We're talking about Homeland Security and the dangers we have of those folks having information. Well, the IRS is another abusive institution that takes away and hampers people's rights, helps extort money from people, and this particular institution also has all sorts of power over folks and uses information in an abusive manner. On September 16, 2003, the IRS hosted a press conference to announce a new partnership with the states of the Union to further violate the rights of Americans, says this article, in their quest to generate more revenues. While it's nothing new for the IRS to continue their unchecked rampage against American people, there was much more to this little press conference than most folks can appreciate. So I'll spell it out here for everyone. Since 1999, We the People Foundation, a constitutional education based in New York and headed by Robert Schultz, have petitioned the federal government to answer serious legitimate questions regarding the legitimacy of the federal income tax and deliberate misapplication of the Title 26, that's the Internal Revenue Code, against domestic Americans. Since 1999, not one single employee, agent, or representative of the IRS or Department of Justice have felt the need to answer the questions of the people. As typical with a tyrannical government, these servants of the people have forgotten something very important. This government was created of, by, and for the people of these United States of America, and the power still lies with the people. And according to one of their spokesmen, IRS official Terry Lemons, Lemons said that the government is answering our petitions now through enforcement actions. Well, what does that mean? Can you imagine? And through their enforcement actions, they answer our petitions. Oh, I'll tell you what that answer to that question means. Stand up against the wall while I'll beat your head in. We're gonna slam you and take away your money. We'll show you what the answer to your question is. You who love liberty, we're here because we can extort your money. We have the right behind the law, and we're gonna slam you. That's what it sounds like. One of our researchers here at TRN says, echoes of Patrick Henry. On March 23rd, 1775, Patrick Henry, the famous and fiery orator of the Revolutionary War period, gave his Liberty or Death speech. Here are some of his words. Mr. President, as it is natural to man to indulge in the illusions of hope, we are apt to shut our eyes against a painful truth and listen to the song of that siren till she transforms us into beasts. It is in this Is this the part of wise men engaged in a great and arduous struggle for liberty? Are we disposed to be of the numbers of those who have having eyes see not and having ears hear not the things which so nearly concern their temporal salvation? For my part, whatever anguish of spirit it may cost, I am willing to know the whole truth, to know the worst, and then to provide for it. But I have one lamp by which my feet are guided, and that is the lamp of experience. I know no way of judging the future but by the past. Is it that insidious smile which our petition has been lately received? Ask yourselves how this gracious repetition of our petition, comports with those warlike preparations which cover our waters and darken our land. Let us not deceive ourselves, sir. We there are implements of war and subjugation, the last arguments of the king to which kings resort. I ask, gentlemen, sir, what means this marital array or martial array? It is of purpose not to be forced us into submission. Can gentlemen assign to any other possible motive for it? Has Great Britain any enemy in this quarter of the world to call for the accumulation of navies and armies? No, sir, she has none. They are meant for us. They can be meant for no other. They are sent over to bind and rivet upon us those chains which the British ministry has so long been forging. And what have we to oppose them? Shall we try argument? Sir, we have been trying that for the last 10 years. Have we anything new to offer on the subject? Nothing. And he goes on to talk about, basically, look, folks, we tried arguing with these people. We tried petitioning these people. At some point, it's going to come right down to their enforcement techniques being met with force on it by our side. There's nearly no way that we can stop the stem the tide, according to the Henry Doctrine. I wish it weren't the case, but I don't know of any time in American history or the history of the world, really, that we've had a true political, peaceful movement back towards liberty. Instead, we always see that government gets more tyrannical, things get worse and worse. I should say the state gets more tyrannical, things grow worse and worse over time. Well, we appreciate the researchers reminding us something about what Patrick Henry had to say this morning. And it looks like we have a caller on the line. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview this morning with Dr. John Coben. And you're on the air. Who am I speaking with? Just a second. We're having trouble getting you on the air here. Okay, who am I speaking with?
Nick.
Hello, Nick. Nice to have you on the show today.
Thanks. I just caught the tail end of your broadcast here because we're having a problem getting your signal out here in Simpsonville.
Okay.
But I do have to agree that it almost seems like everything comes down to revolution, you know. And it makes me wonder, you know, there seems to be a movement in this country to accept this Islamic faith as though there's, you know, a total peaceful religion and everything like that. And you know, it seems to me like these people are the very ones that, you know, struck the World Trade Center and all that kind of thing. And yet, so it almost appears as though the only time that the government becomes sort of whatever group it is when they become militant.
Yes.
Does that seem to strike you too?
Yes. Well, you're precisely right in what you say. Unfortunately, in the history of the world, governments do not yield power except by force. In other words, unless you're going to bring King John to Runnymede and actually threaten to chop the guy's head off right then and there, unless he signs the document and do something to ensure your liberties, he's just not going to do it. He doesn't care how much you petition him. That's in a peaceful society, it'd be nice to think that it would actually work. But once the state turns tyrannical, like it did after Abraham Lincoln in this country and Franklin Delano Roosevelt and others, there's really no turning it back, and all we can do is stem the tide of the downfall.
Well, you know, the thing that strikes me, though, is that, see, the Christian community has always taken the back seat to everything. It seems like, you know, we want to do things by petition, and we want to do things by supposedly changing the hearts of, you know, whoever it happens to be, and yet we become the very ones that get stepped on, it seems, you know.
Well,
it just seems like, well, like you said, you know, they only yield power to force. But, you know, it seems to me like it's almost beyond the ability to have force anyhow, because they have become so, you know, tyrannical that that they have their, you know, police and their bureaucracies, and before you can even put together a peaceful movement, you know, they're out there breaking you up.
Yeah, you're precisely right. It becomes harder and harder. The more powerful the military of the United States gets, the Second Amendment becomes almost moot because they are just so powerful. It's hard to believe or conceive of how Americans could actually put down the tyrannical state in which we have now. So what is the solution?
Not only the Second Amendment becomes mute, but even the First Amendment, when it comes to them restricting our religious beliefs and so forth, and our religious speech, you know. And matter of fact, I think even teaching evolution versus not teaching creationism, you know, or at least intelligent design or whatever they want to call it, you know, to give at least the other side of the story is another one of those tyrannical things too. And the thing there is that they're usurping, let's say, the arena of ideas, you know, and therefore that is tyrannical to me, because what they're doing is just like in Nazi Germany, they keep on pushing to get these kids out of their parents' you know, control, let's say, by the time they're like 3 years old, you know.
Well, you've been bringing up Nick. You've been bringing up a great point about the public school. In fact, we've spent a lot of the show this morning already just talking about the government school. Can you hold on during the break? We've got to come up to a quick break here on the Tyranny Response Network, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview, where we are exposing tyranny at every level, promoting the liberty and vision the founders of this great nation. Their goals and objectives are our goals and objectives, because we want to be free, and we believe that our Christian values are best served under a system of liberty, a non-socialistic or capitalistic system. As well as the ability to, we want to give people on that by listening to the show, a greater ability to think about issues more deeply. And we're doing that today as we discuss some very important topics. Right now we have on the line with us Nick, who's calling from Simpsonville. And by the way, if you're in the Greenville area listening to the show on the FM dial, remember that until we're upgraded a little later this month, we're still going to have pretty poor reception around many places in the Greenville area. We appreciate you putting up with the static and listening if you're more than 10 miles or at least 6, 7, 8 miles out of downtown Greenville. And we do appreciate your efforts to listen to the show, and it will get better. Just bear with us, folks. Remember, this is only the ninth week that the Tyranny Response Network has been on the air, and so we're improving with our volunteer staff little by little. Anyway, welcome back onto the show, Nick, and I had a question for you, Nick. Are you still with us, Nick?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Okay. I don't know if you were listening earlier, but today we're having a debate at the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting at Sims Library, Pelham Road, 10 o'clock in the morning. Which many people are going to be attending. I'm one of those who are opposed to the Put Parents in Charge Act. There are some who are conservatives or neoconservatives and even some libertarians who are on the side of the PPIC. And in fact, I got an email we'll read after we're done with our call from one such libertarian, I believe. But at any rate, what's your view on the PPIC? Have you thought much about this this tyranny?
Well, I haven't really seen too much of the actual proposals, you know, because I don't think anyone has seen a whole lot of the proposals, to tell you the truth. And I think that is part of the problem, because we have a lack of the information on this kind of thing. And I don't know if it's by design or if it is, you know, just the way it happens at the moment, that there's not enough information is out there floating around about it.
Actually, Nick, if you type in, you know, the Put Parents in Charge Act on the internet, a Google search, you'll pull up all sorts of documents regarding it. And you can just read the text of the bill. The stated objectives are pretty easy to find. The stated objectives are supposedly that you restore parental control to as if it's been lost. The second one is to bolster or shore up the public school. And the third one is to use redistributive programs through so-called scholarship funding to put...
Well, I'm against scholarship funding, first of all, mainly at the college levels, because I just feel like this is taking our money, turning it over to who knows who, and giving it back to the education establishment, which drives the cost up rather than driving the cost down or keeping it down, because as soon as you start giving money to the education establishment, they feel like, well, they've got an open-ended checkbook here, you know, and all they need to do is start writing in the figures.
Uh-huh.
And I just feel like that in itself is ridiculous, because, you know, you look at the college tuitions, they've gotten ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, what? I tend to agree with some of what you're saying there, but I'm specifically concerned about the public education system, the government schools, K-12, they're going to be helped by the PPIC. Have you thought, you know, what they say that they're going to have this scholarship fund that's going to help children in poverty, or earlier versions of the bill said lower to middle income children.
You know, it seems like the government does everything to keep people in poverty to start with. And as far as putting the people in charge of their kids, well, why is it that they keep on trying to take control away from the parents, you know, to start with? And the second point was the bill was what now again? I forget.
They want to shore up public education, improve its results.
Well, that would be something I definitely don't feel like doing, because when they talk about shoring up public education, it seems to me like the first thing they do is start creating more bureaucracies. The second thing they do is to keep on telling us how we need to dump more money into it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, education by dumping more money into it is ludicrous.
Well, and not only that, it supports our enemy. It's kind of like building up the foe that really wants to harm us the most in society. And secular humanism has been the greatest proponent of anti-Christian, anti-liberty ideals in the nation. And subverting the nation. And so why would in the world we want to prop it up or shore it up or help it improve? I don't know. Conservatives are just, and the libertarians support it to me, in my mind, are completely backwards.
Well, you know, see, the thing about when they talk about improve, see, we have what's called the doublespeak, you know, going on here, because what they're talking about is improve all the time, seems to be, well, have more teachers that they can buy their votes from, or, you know, talk them into voting for instance, I know Tenenbaum or whoever is, you know, on their side running, so that they can, you know, more or less have a captive audience for pushing whoever candidate they have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of their improvement process, to tell you the truth.
Well, that's a great point. I appreciate the call. Believe it or not, we run up against another break, and I do appreciate you calling in, Nick, and I hope that in another edition of the Christian Worldview Show, you go ahead and call in and express your views. Always a joy having people on the right supporting the Tyranny Response Network, because there are folks out there who are like-minded, if in case you're wondering, who actually oppose tyranny and support liberty. So we're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back in a few minutes on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, P-R-O-S as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's nppros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.nppros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we do welcome you back to Christian Worldview. Yes, it is another public school bashing day. Are we just public school bashers? Yes. And proud of it, frankly. The government school has been the greatest progenitor of evil in this society, not only even more than the mainstream media or false religion, folks. People who get indoctrinated at the government indoctrination centers with all of their views about alternative lifestyles, about Darwinism, about abortion, socialism, and the the views antithetical to liberty, the revisionist history that goes on. Yeah, we're against all of those things because they promote tyranny, they promote statism, they promote the values that are cherished by people on the left, by the liberals, the modern-day liberals of society. And yes, without any shame, I am a public school basher, one who wants to dispose of the public school as quickly as possible. Appreciate Nick's comments, who just called in. And today, I just want to remind you again, in just an hour and 15 minutes, we'll be down at the Americans for Constitutional Government meeting on Sims Road, or Pelham Road, the Sims Library on Pelham Road between Boiling Springs and Hudson in Greenville. In case you want to attend, the debate will be between myself, Ben Graydon, Juliet Kosak, both members of the Constitution Party. I'm, of course, pro-life libertarian. We're all opposed to the bill, and there'll be three others there who will be in favor of the bill. Should be a pretty good crowd out there. Get there early if you can, if you want to hear the debate between us on the issue. We have also an email which has come in regarding this particular event coming up. Andrew, who wrote in and said, "Dr. Coben, I read your articles on PPIC. Now, the articles on PPIC can be found on my webpage, policyofliberty.net. If you go to policyofliberty.net, click the Articles tab. It'll show a list there of articles, especially the Times Examiner weekly column. And the March 2nd and March 9th columns, which, of course, are posted on the website before they've been printed in the Times Examiner, have to do with what I think about the Put Parents in Charge Act, the PPIC. Anyway, he says, I read your articles. I have no problem with your conscientious objection or opposition to PPIC. If the status in Colombia keep tinkering with the proposal by heaping more accountability, read regulations with private schools, I might be inclined to agree. But at this point, I'm still on the for side. So he was sort of on the fence in a way, but really he's on the side in favor of passing this PPIC bill. PPIC is no doubt flawed. Admittedly, I don't know all the details, and I hope you will do well today by pointing people towards the ideal. I, too, abhor the government control of public schools and the extortion required to fund them. First, although preferable, I don't believe they will ever be allowed to collapse and require require starting from scratch, at least not without massive extortion increase or before a total national collapse. I think gradualism is, unfortunately, our only hope. I am for less gradualism if we can get it, but I am all for more gradualism if we can do better. Well, of course, I'm going to stop there, and I'll come back and read what else Andrew has to say. But the point is that gradualism does not work. It never has worked, and if it's our only hope, then hope is indeed completely vain on this point. So I couldn't disagree more on this particular point, Andrew, although I appreciate your graciousness and the way you're writing in and talking about this issue. Of course, I think somewhere in here you mentioned that you are a libertarian, as I am, and so we both hold to common values and perspectives on things. So I appreciate your writing in and presenting this particular view. But gradualism, the idea of the Fabian socialist, that little by little you change society towards a leftist premise, works well as long as you have institutional control, like the public school, the media, and a few other things under your belt that can literally indoctrinate and shift the belief system of people slowly over time. We who are on the right, who love liberty, do not have any such institution in place at this point. The only thing we can do is oppose those great institutional arrangements which oppose us. And so that's why I'm suggesting we oppose entirely the public school system and try to dilapidate and just degenerate it as quickly as possible to nothing. The way we do that is not necessarily by bringing in the bulldozers, although that would work, when all the children are gone away, bombing them all at night and demolishing them. I'm sort of kidding when I say that. I'm just saying if we wanted to get rid of them by obliterating, remember that F-16 attack accidentally on the Pennsylvania school at night, with the bullets hitting it and so forth. No one was in there, but the buildings were destroyed. Well, if the infrastructure was gone for the public school, it would be a great moment in the liberty of our in the history of liberty and a victory for us. But I think the way we do it is not by gradualism working within the system. It's to completely start a counterculture, which has begun through the homeschooling movement. And as we pull more and more kids into homeschooling environments, we are going to remove from the left its ability to subvert the population, to turn us away from the truth and to point us towards the Christian ideals again and towards the ideals of the founding fathers. So I don't think gradualism is going to work at all in our case. We do not have the institutional arrangements in place for gradualism to work. What we need is a radical counterculture in order to do better, and that I think is done primarily through the homeschool movement and of course through shows like Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're glad you're listening to the show today. Let me continue on with what Andrew had to say. He says, where we differ is, I want public school children to do well and for public schools to do well. Yes, we do differ on that. Why? Because if kids are doing well and parents and taxpayers are pleased, then I'm less offended to be taxed to pay for them. In other words, the more tax-supported product mimics an alternative that would purchase given free choice, the less of an offense the extortion. Likewise, if other people are happy with public school performance, then I am less offended by the extortion of others because their voluntariness quotient has increased. I will still fight for the minority who reject taxation to subsidize government schools. Appreciation for progress does not change my appreciation for the final objective. Well, this is problematic to me, and I hope it will be to some Christian Worldview listeners, because the fact that they do something better with the money that's extorted from me really is not much cause for me to support the extortion. It doesn't make any sense to me to say, oh, well, you know, I like the way the mafia painted its building. It's kind of pleasing to me, the flower garden they put out in front with the money they stole. Therefore, it's not so bad. It could be worse extortion. They could be supporting, you know, shipping off cigars and cigarettes and whatever else to people in Canada. I don't know. Whatever it might be, or, you know, whatever thing cockamamie idea we may come up with. Extortion is still extortion. It doesn't matter if we happen to like it a little better, what they do with the results. Although, I guess there's some small benefit. I think you have a point there, Andrew, in saying, well, yeah, I like it a little better. It gives me a little more utility in a utilitarian sense. The fact is, it's still extortion. It's still accomplishing the same amount of evil, and therefore it needs to be opposed. He continues, he says, such a true believer as I am, and I'm sure that I'm sure if public schools do improve, it will be because they more closely resemble a free market. How can that possibly be? All other things being equal, okay, to the extent to which a measure advances public schools more towards a free market, that is the extent to which I would approve of such a measure. Does PPC in its current form not do even this? No, it doesn't do that. It brings us more socialism. It brings us more government control, and it does not move us more towards a free market. Simply by saying that parents have more choice because they have a tax credit, they're going to start doing principled things. It's very debatable. I mean, think about it. If you paid people to go to church, would more people go? Well, yeah, but are they going to do it because they really have a principled conviction about doing it? I don't think so. I don't think people who have a principled conviction about having their kids in public school will be motivated to move out. They're already done it. They're willing to put the sacrifice up if they have a conviction. The idea, if we give a few lower-income families or families that make less than $75,000, you're not low-income, but lower than high-income, I guess, if we give them some more money, that they'll be willing to go ahead and pull their kids out and act in a principled manner is a very dubious statement, to say the least. I want to continue with this, but we've run up against this break, and so we're going to take a quick break on Christian Worldview, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're trying to do that, even though the liberals are also opposed, along with me, to PPIC. They're opposing it for different reasons. They actually worry that the public school will lose some money, lose some support, and hopefully that will happen, of course, but I don't think it will with PPIC. But they're worried that way, and therefore they're opposed to the PPIC Act. I want to continue with what Andrew had to say, just his last paragraph in his note here. I don't want any private or homeschoolers to be forced to be any more like public schools. But if there is anything such as a final victory, I think we get closer to it as public schools behave more like a free market. And when causal observers, I think he means casual observers, not his fault in writing, it's my fault in reading, folks, voters, understand that we have a relative resemblance to private counterparts is the source of the improvements and state control the source of the deficiencies. Finally, this brings me to the political considerations, which I intentionally consider last, for which our side is not really just marketing truth, because we need to make people's lives people's lives better and then tell them why they are better so they understand. Well, okay, the political arguments are interesting, but they're moot. They're dependent upon the other parts being correct. And I think, Andrew, you have believed something that's not true about the Act, and that's that it promotes free markets or that it promotes advances the public school to behave more like a free market system. The public school in no way, because of PPIC, will behave more like it would under a free market system. Under a free market system of education, if you had, for instance, private schools, there would be no extortion, no tax money used to support it. There would not only be competition between parents, which already exists, who might send their kids there at a public school or any other private school, or you keep them at home and homeschool them, but there would be no indoctrination through federal regulation. When I say indoctrination through federal regulation, realize that the public school is the slave of the federal bureaucracy. The Department of Education says something. If they don't want to lose federal funding for the public schools in South Carolina or any other state, they have to conform. And if those mandates come down supporting affirmative action, supporting the abolishing of Christian religious holidays or prayer in school or any other thing that people might find objectionable, you have a state-run system of education. You do not have a free market in education. What in PPIC brings us to a more free market position? The right, or the so-called conservatives, the neoconservatives, are saying, well, it allows more competition. That's the only thing that brings it to be more like a free market. Well, it doesn't. The bill does not change fundamentally the nature of the public school at all. All it does is give a tax credit to certain people who make less than $75,000 a year. Those people can get a credit, a pretty significant credit, on their property tax and or income, state income tax bills, and that was supposedly give them the incentive to move their kids out of these schools, the public schools, and into the private schools. As the school worries about that, the public school worries about this, they're supposed to improve their quality so they don't lose so many clients, as it were, and they improve quality by improving their programs. Well, it's not entirely clear that this would happen at all. In fact, as I've argued just before the break, it seems to me that parents who are principled enough to take their kids out of the public school are going to do so regardless of whether or not there's a few hundred extra dollars or not, or maybe it's $500 or even $1,000 or even $1,500 per year. This does not hardly make a dent maybe it makes a dent in the private school tuition. It would pay for the cost of homeschooling, but it's not such a huge savings that people who have a conviction already wouldn't already have moved out. But those are incentives that are given to people in the marketplace, the consumers of education, namely the parents who are deciding where to send their kids. It does nothing to not cause, as far as I can tell, reading the Act. Show me, Andrew, where in the Act does it say or does it indicate that public school act more like a free market institution? It's just not there. If it were, I might somewhat agree with you and might even be a little more sympathetic to PPIC. But the bottom line, as far as I can tell, folks, PPIC promotes and engenders greater socialism, greater government control, and most importantly, opens the door for further government control in the future of how we should run homeschools or private schools. It uses a lot of tricky language and false statements that say things like, we're going to restore parental control in education through this act. When parental control is already restored, it doesn't need to be fixed. It's already there. I already have control over how children are educated here in South Carolina, as in most places in America. So that's a trick, and it's certainly an untruth, a necessary provision, and it's something I don't support the bill for. And the second provision, as we discussed with Nick, is simply that it supports public education. It wants to actually help our great social enemy. There's no way I want to support public education in any way, shape, or form. So at any rate, these are the reasons that I oppose the PPIC. And Andrew, I appreciate the email, but I hope you see that there are some questions that can be raised about gradualism in your comments, about the public school being more free market because of this bill, because it's just certainly not the case. Perhaps you'll come to the debate, and we'll talk about it a little bit more then. Believe it or not, we've come to the end of another Christian Worldview show with Dr. John Coben. We're so glad you joined us this morning on this edition that has been especially devoted to public schooling and government schooling because of the debate coming up in an hour. Hope to see you all there at Sims Library on Pelham Road in Greenville. Get there early so you make sure you can get a seat. And we'll see you again tomorrow morning on the Tyranny Response Network. This has been Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview. with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.